Will the meeting now please come to order, and may we all stand as we pledge allegiance to our flag, and also please remain standing as the invocation will be given by Pastor Jeffrey Woods, Barnabas Leadership Foundation.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Join me in a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, in a month in which we have been highlighting those who are providing foster care, food assistance, and mental health care, it is appropriate that we acknowledge as part of Older Americans Month those elders among us whose efforts and endeavors have brought us to where we are now, as well as those who in their senior years continue to inspire us through their example and leadership of selfless service. May their example encourage us as we continue to follow in their footsteps. Thank you for all those young people who, by using their artistic talents, encourage us to be good stewards of all the resources with which you have entrusted us, recycling and repurposing them to promote the health of our environment. Thank you, too, in this Public Works Week for all those who serve in our Public Works Department, helping our city and county to function more smoothly, efficiently, and effectively. Thank you for those among us whose work has put us in a position to apply for funding to assist and empower those who have been victims of crime, and for those whose wise planning enables us to promote public safety in a fiscally and socially sound manner. Give wisdom, discernment, and courage, I pray, this evening to our elected county supervisors in the decisions that they make, and give wisdom, grace, and strength to those who will carry out their decisions. For I ask this in the name of your Son, who demonstrated your care for us and continues to call us by his example and presence with us to seek the highest good of our whole community. Amen. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor. Tonight's a very exciting night. We have presentation on accommodations for the 2016 Stanislaus County Outstanding Senior Citizens of the Year in celebrating of Older American Month. I call it More Mature Month, is my personal comment. And if Jerry Johnson, who's president of Stanislaus County Commission on Aging.
Good evening, Chairman Monteith, board members, Mr. Risen, and Mr. Doering. My name is Jerry Johnson. I'm president of the Stanislaus County Commission on Aging, and it is my honor this evening to introduce the 2016 Stanislaus County Outstanding Senior Citizens. The month of May is officially recognized as Older Americans Month throughout the nation, and senior citizens around the nation are being recognized for their contributions to our country. Stanislaus County is joining communities nationwide in celebrating this month, and tonight the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors will be recognizing five outstanding senior citizens, one from each supervisory district, for their outstanding volunteer work in their respective communities. Through their volunteer work, they enrich the quality of life for all county residents. On behalf of the Stanislaus County Commission on Aging, I'd like to thank these five outstanding senior citizens for their contributions. They are truly an inspiration to all of us. District 1, Supervisor O'Brien, Mr. Dale Butler.
Well, it's an absolute honor for me to be here tonight to present this award. First, I'd like to congratulate all five of the nominees and award recipients tonight, but everybody else who volunteers out in your community, it's just incredible. tonight's very special for me. This is my 12th and final time I get to do the senior award. And I was hoping this day would come that we'd be able to recognize you, Mr. Butler. And I'll go through the reasons why. First, I want to go through this photo album that everybody's going to get.
Great pop.
In this album, you're going to see all kinds of letters and awards and accommodations from everybody from Congressman Denham, a bunch of assembly members and senators from the state of California, including our local ones. We have a proclamation from the White House in here. We have proclamations from several of the city's mayors throughout St. Ansel's County, proclamation from the Board of Supervisors, and it's just a way for us all to recognize all the great work that each of the five award winners tonight are going to get. So we'll give this to you in a second. But I get to talk about Del Butler, citizen in District 1. And I'm going to go through this list. It's quite an extensive list, but it just goes to show you how much that you're involved in our community here in Santa Claus County. Dale is, I think, volunteer is your middle name. And you're going to see that. And please bear with me, but these are all the organizations that Dale Butler has been a part of. DRAIL, the Disability Resource Agency for Independent Living, Latino Community Roundtable, Stanislaus Regional Latino Chamber of Commerce, Latino Emergency Council, HEDRESS, which is the Center for Human Services, Hispanic Leadership Council, Stanislaus County Mabuhay Club, you're going to tell me about that one, California State University Stanislaus President's Advisory Council, American GI Forum, Stanislaus County Area Operation Council, South Modesto Business United, El Concilio de Stanislaus County, YMCA, Mayor's Committee for the Employment of Persons with Disabilities, Mexican American Political Association, Casa de Modesto Retirement Center, MJC Blue Ribbon Multicultural, Modesto B Hispanic Advisory Council, California Association of Equal Rights Professionals, North Modesto Kiwanis Club, Comité Mexicano de Beneficios, Global Ambassador for City of Modesto's International Festival, Judge for the City of Modesto 4th of July Parade, Stanislaus County Fair Board Director for 20 years, a Commissioner of Civil Marriages for Stanislaus County. And here's the last one that I wanted to talk about. Dale has been named as one of the 25 most influential Latinos in the Central Valley. Sir. Dale, I want to first thank you so much for everything you do for this community and congratulate you very much on all your accomplishments.
Well, I'm certainly honored to receive this very important award, and it is that. I totally was not expecting this to happen. Someone nominated me, and I thank the supervisor and AAA staff for providing the award. I'm very, very grateful and very honored, as I said. I do want to thank, of course, the commission itself. You have some great volunteers on the commission. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, certainly on behalf of the elderly, this community, and beyond. And we have some tremendous volunteers on this commission. So I say to you, keep up the good work. AAA, the office staff, are just wonderful. You know, the director, Margie, you do a great job. I want to thank you for that. I've known Margie when I was a county employee. I was with the county 34 years before I retired in 2004, worked in the CEO's office. So we have some great county employees, too. So again, I'm honored to receive this award, and I thank everyone that was involved in making this possible for me. I do want to thank the other awardees, the other four individuals. I think I do know one of them very, very well, and she'll be up here very shortly, and I congratulate her certainly for her recognition and the other awardees as well. So I thank the Board of Supervisors and you personally, this is basically the last time you're going to have folks recognized. as far as this award is concerned, and I thank you. So honored to be here today. Thank you all.
District 2, Supervisor Chiesa, Ms. Teresa Guerrero.
As she's walking up, I want to say something. This is absolutely my favorite board meeting of the year. And what you do is you have the young kids meeting the greatest generation. And what good examples, and I know there's a lot of parents out there, but what a tremendous example they set for all of us. Supervisor Withrow always likes to talk about the greatest generation, and what separates them is their giving, their ability to give, whether it's in the military or whether it's just to county organizations, whether it's to the state organizations, but they're always giving, doing what's best. So what I think's interesting about this is that not a one of the five of you understand what retirement is. I know that you're supposed to be seniors, and I would question whether you're a senior. Still nice and young, but it truly is an honor, and I'm very humbled to be up here today with Teresa Guerrero. She has the same type of resume. You just heard about Mr. Butler, and Mr. Butler and I served on a board together. We spent a few years, but looking through this, Teresa, she's organized the annual Women's Conference held at California State University Stanislaus. She's executive director of Parents Institute for Quality Education, PK, in case you haven't heard that. She was a volunteer tutor and a resource liaison with the Migrant Educational Program at Coswell School. She's a member and volunteer for the Mujeres Latinas de Stanislaus. She is a past president of the Hispanic Leadership Council. She's a volunteer advisor for the Hispanic Youth Leadership Program at Downey High School. So you hear everything. She's touching on our youth over and over and over again. She's a member of the Stanislaus County Juvenile Justice Commission. She serves on the advisory council for the New Boys and Girls Club of Stanislaus County. And she is a member of the Ceres Unified School District Board of Trustees. And what I think is interesting is it came from humble beginnings. And on this it says she received numerous awards, but she's a child of hard-working farm workers, and that's where she learned her positive work ethic, which is just about everyone in this county. When you think about what a melting pot there is, that's how we became who we are. She was named one of the 10 most influential Latinas in Stanislaus County by Vida en el Valle, and she's been very positive role model and a mentor. That's where I think it's very important for the younger folks to pay attention. We need more role models and mentors, and Teresa Guerrero is just that. So, again, on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, District 2, I'm so proud to have you be the senior citizen. I hate calling you a senior citizen. I just don't like that. Senior Citizen of the Year for District 2. Congratulations.
I want to thank the supervisors also, and of course, my supervisor, Vito, for the nomination. And I can't leave this podium without saying that I had an amazing mentor. I have lots of mentors out in the audience, Maggie Mejia, Dale Butler. But I have a dear mentor that is no longer with us, and that's Peter Johansson, who was responsible for putting me in the place that I am now. And I learned a lot from that man. So I couldn't leave without mentioning that we all find role models, and we just learn from them, and we take all the good things that they do, and then we try to do maybe a little bit more than that. And mentally, I'm already retired. but I do love what I do. My husband's been retired for 3 years, so it's really hard. He's ready, Jose.
There it is.
So, yes. So, yeah, it is hard.
Congratulations.
District 3 Supervisor Withrow, Ms. Beverly Sawyer.
I got you here, Bev. We'll sneak up here. Come on up. So this is kind of a special one for me. Bev, come on over here, Bev. Bev is a client of mine. And for the last, I don't know how many years, we've been doing tax returns together. Sometimes she's happy with me, sometimes she's not happy with me. Yeah. But and she comes in with her daughter, Kim, and so when I saw that you were gonna get this year, Bev, I was thrilled, and it all just kinda made sense to me then. Because over the years, as we meet, which is usually once, sometimes twice a year, depending on if the IRS is coming after you for something, I've noticed just what a warm-hearted person you were, and I could just tell that, you know, you get to know your clients pretty well over the years, and it's funny what your clients will tell you. You become very close to them because if they trust you with their money, they trust you with everything, sometimes more than you want to know. And so I've gotten to know Bev very well, and her and just the big heart that she has. I was always amazed at what a big-hearted person she was. And so this then is but I had no idea of all the things you were involved in. And so then once I saw this and I started to look through that, I realized that this is perfect. This is perfect for Bev. So just kind of going through all the things that she's involved in. Since 65, she's been involved with Grace Lutheran Church as on the Altar Guild, the church council. She's, for 25 years, been involved with the City of Modesto Police Department, which you wouldn't think Bev would be involved with the police department when you look at her, but she's involved with the police department. She's involved with the DARE program, the HAWK program, which is helping adults with kindness. It looks like 20 hours a week. Bev is 90 years old, and she is still doing these things. So it really makes us all... You know, you really feel bad. We go home at night, we're sore, we sit down, we're tired. I mean, we're wimps is what we are. So anyway, all these things, Modesto City Schools for 16 years, 5 years with Campfire Girls. I think I've had a bunch of the things, and I'm sure so many more things. But I really want you to talk here. I want you to tell everybody. First of all, I want you to introduce. I know you've got your family here, and I'd like you to introduce your family first.
I have the three daughters. Here we go. I have the three daughters, Susan, Kim, and Mary Jean. And I've got a bad case of allergies, so I can hardly talk. So anyhow, I don't know what else to say than I'm just very grateful, and I appreciate the honor because it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed every bit of it. So I haven't got much to say. These allergies are killing me. So anyhow, I thank everybody, and it's been a great pleasure. I hope I can continue on for another 10 years. Yeah, thank you.
District 4, Supervisor Monteith, Mr. Richard Edgecombe.
Well, as Richard Edgecombe walks up here, I just want to make a little story, perhaps. Richard and I met over 60 years ago, not personally, but we knew each other as opponents. He went to Modesto High School, I went to Turlock High School, and we played football against each other. Little did we know that we would meet in this capacity over 60 years later. Richard, it's a privilege to present this certificate of recognition. As I look over your resume, my first question comes, what do you do with your spare time? But as I note here, you know, Richard was in the U.S. Army for over 4 years during the Vietnam. And he served a total of 47 years in the Army and National Guard. He dedicated and committed to helping those in need, making him an inspiration to others. He averaged 175 volunteer hours a month. And that's why I asked, what does he do in his career? He also was involved in the American Legion for 23 years, serving in a variety of leadership positions and activities. The American Legion State Boys School Award Medal Program for Youth organized Christmas food baskets for needy veterans and their families, assisted in the Modesto 4th of July Parade and the Veterans Day Parade, and setting up flags on Memorial Day. Also, Richard received numerous awards for his wide variety of volunteer work. In 2004, he was named the State Legionnaire of the Year. In 2006, he was awarded funds for the Modesto B Book of Dreams contest to purchase uniforms for the American Legion youth baseball team. Now, in 2012, he was named the 25th Assembly District Veteran of the Year, and he received national recognition in a Time magazine article for his leadership in the American Legion youth baseball program. Now, we'll go a little further. This isn't the end. He also drove the 40 and 8 Stanislaus Vocher Local 653 train for many years, giving rides to children and adults at various community events. He also maintained and loans out durable medical equipment to senior citizens, disabled persons, veterans, and their family members. In addition, Richard also provides free transportation for veterans to local and Bay Area health clinics for many years. He also was working with Stephen Lawson, director of the Modesto Veterans Center, to lobby for and then help set the Modesto Vet Center. The Veterans Center provides readjustment counseling serving Vietnam. Richard has also been an advocate on behalf of the veterans for many years to the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors. In April of 2012, the Board of Supervisors created the Veterans Advisory Committee, the VAC, to advise the board on matters pertaining to veterans. Mr. Edgecombe was elected chairman of the VAC, and the VAC has worked hard on behalf of Stanislaus County veterans, resulting in the development of a one-stop-shop veteran center that is planned to be open in November 2016. So as you see, some people believe that as we become more mature, we aren't as active. I believe we showed tonight that as you become more mature, we become more active because we realize how much there is out there to accomplish. And Richard, I just want to thank you so much for always being there. And I know this is not the end. This is just a sheet that will continue on. So congratulations. I'd like to give you this certificate of recognition. And also we have from our congressmen and other legislators and people from various cities. Now I give you an opportunity to speak because I always know you have a few words of wisdom.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Board of Supervisors. And I'd like to thank all the aging people over there for the programs. I drop in about two or three times a day to make sure those people are working. And lately, I've been hitting the sixth floor of the Board of Supervisors to make sure that those people are working. There's a lot of things going on in our county that we need all kinds of support for. So right now, we're working really hard on getting the Veterans One-Stop Shop program going, and we need probably November the on Veterans Day, Veterans November the 11th, we'll have a parade and we'll have kind of a grand opening out there for all the veterans to get started on that. The agent's going to be located in it, and we're never going to stop until we get everything running. We'd like to have a hospital here for the VA, but we haven't got it done yet. Thank you. Bless you, my child.
District 5, Supervisor DeMartini, Mr. Paul Borchardt.
Well, congratulations on your award. I have also some of the list of things that you've done here. As one of the things I've noticed here that you were a Sunday school teacher for 30 years for 7th and 8th graders. Now, that should get an award just on its own. Doing that. Started 30 years ago, I was just 9 years old. I just turned 39. And I'd also noticed that, you know, you're in a volunteer with the Boy Scouts and the Cub Scouts for also for 26 years. That's just fantastic to stay with it that long. You're a Scout leader. Cub Scout leader, assistant Cub Master, council resident and camp facilitator for youth who reside in Stanislaus County's west side. You're from Patterson, too, that's right? You also, you do a whole variety of things. Some of them I'm not sure exactly what they are, but the Pine Wood Derby, Blue and Gold Dinner, Rain Gutter Regetta. That one you'd have to explain to me what that is. And... And, of course, the scout leader in Memorial Day and Veterans Day. I always go out to Memorial Day at the Hills Ferry Cemetery and the Patterson Cemeteries, and maybe I'll see you there this year. And you served as Cub Master and for Cub Scout Pack 81. You know, when I read this, I thought, I used to be in the Cub Scouts, and I was Pack 10, Dead and 3. And I just can't believe that I still remember that after all these years. That was mine. As soon as I read that, I said, well, gee, I was Pack 10, N3. So, anyway, you have, a real commitment to children, and not only in the Sunday school, but also, in the scouting, which I think is just a wonderful program. I'm going to read part of this verbatim. Mr. Borchardt is a positive role model and encouragement to the youth he has worked with, whether in the scouting or at church, and he has taught them valuable lessons they will carry throughout their lives, and these attributes will show his dedication to his co-workers. And also in there, I say you're 27 years in the union, you're a shop steward. Employees Association ASCME, which is the American Federation of State and County Municipal Workers, we just call it ASCME here. And I say you're even involved in supporting the people in the city of Patterson must belong to that union. Yes. So anyway, I want to thank you for everything that you've done. And you're very active on the west side, and I really commend you working with the youth in the area. I noticed you had quite a contingent of your family here. You want to point those out to us?
Yeah, I have four of our children here and their families with 6 of our 14 grandchildren. My wife, Shirley, who's manning the camera in front there. Would like to thank the families and the leaders in the Cub Scout Pack. This was all part of their efforts to show appreciation for my efforts, and they surprised me with this, the nomination at the time they were doing it. So, Leticia, thank you. I see you over there. Wanted to thank my wife, Shirley. She and I have been working together as volunteers in Patterson and even before that. And we spent a lot of time with youth programs in both Girl and Boy Scouts. It's a real honor to still be doing that. So I feel very humble and honored to be included in the group of individuals I've heard described before me. Very honored to be a part of the group that's being honored tonight. Thank you for your service as well. I know we all perform this service without any thought of recognition, but it's nice to be noticed once in a while too. But thank you everyone, and may God bless you all. Thank you.
Before you go, I've got a book of recognition here from our state senators, assemblymen, mayors, and of course the Board of Supervisors. But I've got to know what the rain gutter regatta is. I just
Rain Gutter Regatta is a summer event for our Cub Scout group. The boys build a sailing boat from a kit they receive, and then I have built two plastic rain gutter 10-foot-long sections that we fill with water, and they have to race the boat from one end to the other by blowing air on the sail of the boat. So it's a fun event, and they get a little wet on a hot evening, and it's a good time for all.
Sounds like fun. I just know what that was. Well, here's all your awards. Congratulations on everything you've done.
I want to thank the Board of Supervisors for your help in honoring the outstanding seniors. And I want to remind everyone to spend a little extra time with seniors in your lives this month, because it is Older Americans Month. Thank you.
Yes, Richard. I forgot to mention my wife for 61 years. Don't ever do that, because you're in trouble.
You know, I might as well get up here, too, and I forgot to mention my daughter, Diana, who's visiting me from Pittsburgh. So thank you, Diana, for being here. And I was nominated by Dionisio Cruz, and I really thank him for the nomination. So.
Thank you, Chairman Monteith. Good evening, board members, CEO Risen, County Council Doering, Jamie Yeagers, Director of the Department of Environmental Resources. I'd like to introduce this next presentation item by telling you about our recycling poster contest. This is something that we do each spring for the students in kindergarten through eighth grades, and this covers approximately 34 schools in the unincorporated area of Stanislaus County. This is our largest contest to date, and I'm proud to say that it continues to grow and get more exciting each year. On your way into the chambers this evening, you may have noticed a beautiful display of artwork. That display is showcasing our 2016 poster contest winners, and I would encourage everyone to take a moment on their way out this evening to admire the young talent in our community. This year's winners will be able to experience having their winning artwork highlighted in the next Stanislaus County recycling calendar for the new year. The calendar will be finished at the end of the year and will be distributed throughout the county to schools, cities, libraries, county offices, and so on, and also at numerous public events. Kids, when the calendar arrives, you'll be contacted and asked how many copies you would like. They make excellent Christmas presents for your family. At this point, I would like to turn the program over to Janice McClendon from the Department's Solid Waste staff, who spearheaded this campaign. And Chairman Monteith is also going to be present to assist. Thank you.
Oops. Thank you, Jamie. Janice McClendon, Department of Environmental Resources. Tonight, I am here to present to you the winners of the 2016 Recycling Poster Contest. 31 schools compete in this contest, and over 250 posters are submitted. So out of that number, the 12 students/artists behind me were selected. I hope all of you are very proud of yourselves. These posters will be featured in the 2016-2017 recycling calendars. Their posters not only show their individual creativity, but they also convey the message that our younger generation knows how important it is to preserve the environment. So let's get started with the winners. For the category for kindergarten to first grade, we have, just waiting for her poster to come up. We have Zoe Doan, first grade, Barrington Elementary, teacher Miss Linares. Come on up, Zoe. Right. And for second place, we have Andrew Dunn, kindergartner, Hickman Elementary, Mrs. Burkhart. Andrew here? Andrew was not able to make it tonight. And in first place, we have Ernesto Ibarra, first grade, Dina Bohr Elementary, Mrs. Ibarra. Come on up, Ernesto. Okay, for the second category, second to third grade, third place, we have Giselle Garcia, third grade, Barrington Elementary, Mrs. Cabotage. For second place, we have Caitlin Bennett, third grade, Barrington Elementary, and again, Mrs. Cabotage. Come on up, Caitlin. First place, we have Carla Zavala, second grade, Stroud Elementary, Mrs. Matthews. For the category from fourth to fifth grade, third place, Andres Romero, fifth grade, Von Renner Elementary, Ms. Rempel's class. And Andre was not here. Okay. Second place, we have Audrey Gemperville, fifth grade, Grattan School, teacher Sarah Carlisle. Come on up, Audrey. And in first place, we have Christopher Brown, fifth grade, Hickman Elementary, Mrs. Patton. Is Christopher able to make it? No. Okay, so going on to the sixth to eighth grade category, we have Alexis Ramirez, sixth grade, Yolo Middle School, Mrs. Ball. And in second place, we have Angela Martinez, seventh grade, Creekside Middle School, Ms. Hill. And Angela was not able to make it either. And for first place, we have Natalie Calkins, sixth grade, Grattan School, teacher Mercedes Hallcraft. And I present to you our 2016 Recycling Poster Contest winners. Congratulations, kids. You did great.
Thank you. At this time, are there any public comments? Anyone wishing to make any public comments on anything not on today's agenda? If not, I'll bring it back to the board. And then also on the consent calendar, is there anyone on the board wishing to pull an item or comment? If not, then before the board takes action on the consent calendar, does anyone in the audience wish to make a comment or have a question on any matter on the consent calendar? If not, I'll bring it back to the board, and for advisement.
Motion to approve the consent calendar.
Is there a second?
I will second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. On our agenda now will be B5, Patricia Hill Thomas and Captain Duncan.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Patricia Hill Thomas, Chief Operations Officer. I'm really glad to be here tonight. This is the last day of my vacation, and it's a great and fitting way to finish it out. I left the great state of Oregon this morning sometime with my family, and it's nice to be here in California. And it's nice to bring you what I'll call the last leg of the journey, the great journey that your board has inspired by the county organization has pursued to create safe and modern facilities for individuals who come into trouble with the law in our community, and for our citizens and for our staff who operate those facilities to have a place for generations to come that's modern, safe, and secure. So we didn't just design it. We didn't just be responsible for building it. The same team that I'm going to introduce you to again, because tonight is the night I really need to thank them, is responsible for bringing you back the operating plan as well. So I'd just like to take a moment and remind you and that this, if this were my last chance to thank what we call the jail project team, I will do it as best I can tonight, because this has been an extraordinary and difficult, complex, and challenging journey. It's not easy. That's why a lot of other counties haven't had a chance to do as much. And I think those other counties don't have a board of supervisors who are courageous and inventive and creative about looking well into the future. So thank you, all five of you. A thank you to Jack Doring, has been magnificent. Thank you, Jack. Stan, you have been a great champion for us. And a special thanks to Supervisor Chairman Monteith and Supervisor O'Brien. You had a full-time job with us on all the Public Safety Center projects. And tomorrow, I'm pleased to tell you, we're going to go and do our last partnering to finish this project strong. It's in great condition, and we are nearly done with the final design on our SB 1022 REACT Center. And that's just been a month's worth of work that's also been magnificent. So thank you for allowing me to show our pride today and to thank everyone who has made this possible. I want to thank Bill Duncan. He's going to speak to you before. He sometimes says he works for me. I'm certain that's not true, but he indeed has been inspirational through this whole effort. And I know he could even be happier than I that we will soon, any moment now, finish this part of our journey together. I want to thank Lieutenant Jim Jacobs, and I know he doesn't want me to do this, but he's retiring, and I want to tell Jim, and I want to tell you, that if it hadn't been for Jim Jacobs, I don't think I could have done my small part in this. His humor, his determination, his friendly approach, but his stick-to-itiveness, and I'll tell you what, if you want to meet a man who knows what he wants and knows how to get it, it is Lieutenant Jim Jacobs. Please join me in thanking Jim and congratulating him on his retirement. Lieutenant Greg Clifton, the commander of the Public Safety Center. Greg has done a great job. I'm going to tell you everyone's done a great job so I can get through this, or else I'll turn this into Patty's thank you night, and I know it's not that. Sergeant Steve Traverso. Steve has done a great job. We have a number of deputies who support this whole effort. Deputy Ryan Maxwell, Deputy Brandon Galasso, Deputy Chris Williams, Deputy Dave Wipke, and Deputy Steve Macedo. And that's the transition team. And they work this job all the time, and there's more than enough work for those gentlemen to do as we plan, design, and get ready. The orders for the furnishings and equipment are like 4 inches thick. Every detail of this project is winding down now, and I'm really glad to be able to say that to you more than you'll ever know. I want to give a special thanks to Lieutenant Daryl Long. Daryl is back there somewhere, I know. He's been remarkable through the whole effort. Thank you, Daryl, particularly on the staffing. And then we brought a few more people into the room, as we call it. Seth Rogers. Seth has done a great job, the business manager for the Sheriff's Department. Carrie Griffin from the CEO's office HR team. Great work, Carrie. I think you're here somewhere. Cindy Tomlinson, deputy CEO behind. She's the brains of the organization. I told her on a text as I was traveling back today. And Jody Hayes, assistant CEO, who's been remarkable. And tonight you'll see the benefit of the work that your board approved and that Jody negotiated for the 12-hour shift change, because it really made a difference in terms of this staffing plan going forward. I'd like to thank Veronica Hernandez, the HR manager from the Sheriff's Department. It was good to get to know her, and she has a big job to do, and she's excited about recruiting these new employees to come in for our additional facilities. A special thanks to Leticia Lomeli and Teresa Vanderveen, and our chief probation officer is in the back of the room, and she's been remarkable. Thank you, Jill. I appreciate everything you've done. This is all about a team effort, so I'm going to give you a little bit of history, because what I'm here to tell you tonight, that what we imagined many years ago really is coming to fruition tonight. We need a few more positions than we thought about 5 or 6 years ago, but we have a plan on how to afford that. And I would say, in terms of hitting the mark, we got really, really close. Even before this project was funded, and even before this project was designed. Our master plan, and this is my part that I'm the most proud of, because I'm almost gonna make it to the end, even if tonight's my last night. It includes centralizing, and as Supervisor DeMartini often says, modernizing all our sheriff's adult facilities at the county's public safety center. And the fact that we have a public safety center is so good for us. A known and safe place, zoned and allocated for this purpose. Many communities don't have that, and they're unable to modernize their facilities because sometimes they don't have a place to go. And really, the City of Ceres has been gracious to us from the very beginning of this project, and I know that because I've been involved since the beginning. Tonight, we talk to you about projects 1 and 3, 552 beds. They are over 80% complete. We have 57 jail medical mental health beds, and we have 15 what we call sheltered or hospital style beds, and 480 maximum security beds. And Captain Duncan will say much better than I why that type of classification in our system is so important for the most serious offenders and for the safety of our community, which has always been your board's priority and goal. This picture shows we are so unimaginative about our naming. That's my fault. We finished Project 2, the Day Reporting Center. We are over 82% complete with Project 3, which is the county's facility for intake and release and transportation and administration of custody, entirely funded, 100% cash by public facility fees set aside years ago and generated for this purpose. No debt on that facility. And Project 1, the big jail project, I call it often. 10 cents on the dollar is local county money. 90% is state lease revenue bonds. No debt incurred by the county for that big jail that was never intended to be opened fully on day one, but will last, we hope, for generations in this new approach we have taken. This gives you the artist's rendition. You saw this about 2 years ago in this boardroom. And in April 15, just a little more than a year ago, you could see this is the version on the ground. Look at the yellow and look at the roadways and look at the fact that there are no buildings on the new part. On the left side, on my left, that's the existing public safety center. And gentlemen, please look at just about a month and a half ago. Those buildings are built. They are wrapped up on the exterior, and all of the work that remains is on the inside of the facility. This is magnificent progress, not just because I'm proud of it and bragging. It truly is. And everyone has done such a good job. A special thanks to Hansel Phelps and Dewberry. That team has been remarkable. This project will finish on time, if not a little early, and well under budget. This last shot is an interior shot just a couple of weeks ago of the actual cells in one of the housing units. And it demonstrates, if you look at it closely, that we indeed are almost complete. And last, we wanted to show you the entrance of the what we call the Project 3, the Intake, Release, Administration, and Transportation Building. I can almost see the glass going in and the county seal and the sheriff's seal going on top. This part is also nearing completion. It has been magnificent, but tonight, after I introduce you back to the great Captain Duncan, we're going to talk about the operating side, because we can brag all day long about constructing it. But I know that Supervisor Withow reminded me, because he's a great CPA, that you got to look at the money, and the money is in the operating cost. And so while we have worked hard on the design and construction, we've kept a close eye on what it would take to operate this facility, and that's what we're here to talk to you about tonight. Captain Duncan, good evening.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, CEO Mr. Risen, County Council Mr. Doring, I'm very proud to be here tonight too as a representative of this committee and this team that have worked very closely here for the past 10 years. The sheriff unfortunately was unable to make it here because he is out of state. But as I looked at the images that were presented up on the monitor, I'm reminded of the many tours recently that we've been asked to provide. As a matter of fact, Sergeant Traverso is about ready to change his name to Walt Disney. There's been an e-ticket ride, for those of you that remember the e-ticket, because we've had other sheriff's departments, we've had state officials, including representatives from the governor's office, we have had local representatives, we've had our own staff who have taken a tour of this facility, and every time they leave the facility, we get the same jaw-dropping impact. They look at it, they can't believe the size, the structure, the mission, the scope, and the quality of the building that we've done. All of that was done as a result of a magical collaborative partnership that has existed between the CEO staff and one of my supervisors, Patricia Hill Thomas, of course, in the lead, the Capital Projects team, my own team, of which I'm very proud, the architects, HOK, LDA, and the construction team of HP and Dewberry, and of course, with the full support and vision from you, the Board of Supervisors. The culture of the jail population has changed dramatically over the past 5 years. Since the enactment of AB 109 in October of 2011, we now have a longer-term, high-security inmate with a much higher prevalence for mental illness and with limited access to health care and rehabilitative programs. Despite a brief respite from the overpopulation and substantial early custody releases from Proposition 47, we are once again early releasing inmates due to jail overcrowding and an escalation of crime in our communities. When AB 109 was passed, there was a companion bill that was passed. It was AB 900 Phase 2, which created a contractual arrangement between the state of California and the counties, wherein the state would provide 90% of the funding, 9 cents on the dollar, for new jail construction. Over 20 counties successfully applied and received an allocation of state funding, and yet as I stand here today, we are the only county to make it to construction, and we're more than 80% done with our construction project, a fact of which I'm very proud. We're very near completion, and this completion of that project is scheduled for the fall of this year. The AB 900 project is important because it will meet the public safety needs of the community by adding 552 beds, which were recognized as a need in the county master plan and needs assessment 10 years ago. It will ensure proper security levels, everything from minimum to maximum security, in modern, safe facilities. It will centralize booking of male and female offenders more efficiently and effectively, and provide access to both physical and mental health care in a unique, custom-designed clinic and health care unit. Lastly, our work will culminate as we progress toward our next project, the SB 1022 project, or the Reentry and Alternatives to Custody Treatment Center, with the ultimate goal of providing a continuum of rehabilitative programs for inmates from reception to aftercare, in partnership with our friends from the Probation Department and the Day Reporting Center, which, as Patty alluded to earlier, was already done and is part of our AB 900 project. The ultimate goal is to reduce recidivism and motivate offenders to become more productive law-abiding citizens. Today, before you is a monumental historic occasion as we take the next important critical step in activating these needed beds and programs as we outline a carefully analyzed, planned, phased approach to staffing the new facilities. thank you for your consideration on these proposals, and I'll once again turn it back over to Patty Hill Thomas.
Thank you, Captain. October 29, 2013, you said go for it. June 17, 2014, you approved the project to go to construction, anticipated opening date in March of 2017. We will make all of those milestones that remain. Our staffing plan is a required commitment by the Board of Supervisors to the state of California to staff the facilities that are constructed. Your board passed a resolution promising to open these facilities in a phased approach. And you'll probably recall when we built our SB 81 Juvenile Commitment Center, we were required as a county to fully open it, whether we needed those beds or not. That was a significant change with AB 900 Phase 2, that a phased opening is allowed. But the county must open the facility within 90 days of final construction. You authorized us to submit that preliminary staffing plan back in 2013, as Captain Duncan said, on this part of the effort. We've been working on it since 2010. And that plan included nearly 116 new positions at a cost then of $11.3 million and 47 and a half positions transferring for a full staffing plan of 163. And you'll see in a few minutes how close we are to that. Those costs in that time in 2013 did not project, as you know, and we disclosed any compensated salary increases, nor did they reflect what was later enacted as the 12-hour shift, which has been extraordinarily beneficial to the staffing plan and its affordability going forward. This chart shows you that plan in 2013. The new positions just slightly shy of, I don't know how you can get a 0.2 of a position, but just shy of 116 positions at an estimated cost without escalation, without future salary increases, of $11.3 million. Those were, again, modeled on the 2013 flat costs as identified in your agenda items at the time. Since then, and particularly in this last year, we have updated that model to include not only current and recent, but future wage adjustments approved by the board for our deputy sworn staff that will be there. And the value of those is about $579,000. We have benefited from the 12-hour shift relief. It results overall in fewer positions needed and a savings, not a savings from what will be the cost because we've had cost increases, but a beneficial impact. So a special thanks to our deputy custodials and your board and our negotiating team for implementing that modernization of the jail staffing calendaring and scheduling plan to give a benefit to the county for a long time to come. This diagram shows you the part one, the phase one that we're recommending today. Again, in 2013, we suggested there'd be just short of 116 positions needed. The 12-hour shift has benefited that by just over 17 and a half positions, for now a total of 98.4 positions. And in those costs, you can see the difference. And we decided to show it to you this way because there are other increases that we will speak about, but we wanted to do an apples-to-apples comparison of the original staffing plan without the 12-hour shift pattern and then its adjustment. Our team has continued to assess the staffing needs, and we really believe that there are some additional positions needed to safely supervise these jail operations. This project, when we did the original staffing plan, was not fully designed. Those positions essentially are a lieutenant and 4.4 sergeants, and we do believe and recommend tonight that those positions should be funded. As we recommend the revised staffing plan, it does incorporate the 12-hour shift, and it has now and been for many years in our long-range financial model that we share with you at each budget public presentation and in our budget briefings, so that we have been looking for a long time to be sure that when we open these new and additional facilities, that the county budget can absorb those without other programs being detrimentally impacted. And indeed, our model that we've shared with you recently, that we've shared with you for the last several years, demonstrates our fiscal ability to do that because of good, strong fiscal leadership by your board, by the CEO's office and an eye on the future, not just on our current financial needs. I want to point out something that I know is very important to the board and the community. The Community Corrections Partnership Funds will provide support for some of the operating costs of the new facility. And our CEO and our Chief Probation Officer and others have been instrumental in that plan. It's essentially a 3-to-1 plan, and $3 of general fund money to $1 of CCP money. I will tell you that on the chart on page 7, I made an error in the amount, and so I'm going to come to that later. The reason that I point that out, on page 7, we didn't get exactly the correct number. We missed it a little bit by the Community Correction Partnerships, but it all balances out in the end within the money the board has already set aside, both CCP money and general fund money for this project. And I wanted to make that point to you tonight because our Chief Probation Officer and our CCP team will bring to you next week the recommendations for the coming year for the CCP plan. Thank you. On the next chart, and I'm almost done, we wanted to really show you again what's in the county's long-range financial model. And you can see the number of positions and the change, essentially the savings from the 12-hour shifts. And you can see that we are very close to what we recommended originally. And the impacts of a higher than expected jail medical cost, although tonight we seek your approval to negotiate that, with the compensation increases that have been approved in the years since the plan was developed, and also the benefit of the 12-hour shift, put us financially very close to what we projected with a little bit of savings way back about 5 years ago. So what we seek for your approval tonight will be to add the initial positions for the first two phases so that the recruitment can get underway and we can be well prepared to open our initial occupancy plan on March 31st, 2017. That will include a recruitment cycle about 37 weeks, and it is so scheduled out. It takes more than a wall to show that whole schedule. The first phase is the hiring and training of 32 new full-time positions and the transfer of nearly 22 positions within the 2016-17 fiscal year to meet the March 17 opening. They will join in the transitioning, and we will open only a certain portion of the facility. For example, we will not bring booking over fully. We will only use a portion of the maximum security housing, and I may need Captain Duncan to remind us of the other details of that. My vacation zone just kicked back in. For the recruitment periods, we're looking at essentially this year and the first part of next fiscal year, and we are recommending that we start the recruitments for periods, what we call periods 1 and 2, for those 32 positions that I mentioned earlier, sworn, 1 lieutenant, 6 sergeants, and 25 deputy sheriff custodials. An additional 46 positions will be needed in the next phase of occupancy. And we really suggest, although we show you the entire plan tonight, that the rest of the future years come into the budget process. So there's a decision-making process that includes the board, the sheriff, the staff, and we look again at our long-range model. We look at what our demands for facility beds are, and we balance that as a part of our budget process. And that's really important because here I talk about, I've very fondly, I've waited for so long for March 31st, 2017. But a year later, our REACT Center will be done. And our REACT Center is based on the closure of the downtown jail, except for court holding. And so that whole, we want to be very transparent about how those all interact and keep the rest of those decisions as a part of our regular budget process. That second set of 46 positions, I just saw my note there, sorry about that, opens mail booking the 120 max beds and 57 medical beds should your board approve that in the budget. And that first phase, I skipped over my notes, I apologize, would open adult detention, the Bureau of Administrative Services, female booking, which already occurs at the site, it'll just occur in the new facility, central control, and the first 120 maximum security beds. So that sets up the first two phases. The full build-out was never anticipated to occur before 2018-19. Never before 2018-19. And that decision will be one that's left to the board and the budget process during the year to look at the balance of demands, capacity, and the county budget. The final occupancy would add another 33.6 positions, both sworn and unsworn, when it is determined that the remainder of the facility should be opened. In addition to all the new positions, there are a number of existing allocated positions that would transfer from current assignments as we consolidate ultimately all of our detention facilities at one place. And I think this last chart really shows you how all the positions come in and out through the whole process, leading to ultimately decisions in the 2018-2019 year about staffing these new facilities in the future. If I may, I'd like to turn this over to Deputy CEO Cindy Tomlinson, who will talk to you about the money. Thank you.
Good evening. Thanks, Patty. Part of what this agenda item would do would authorize some use of one-time funds that have previously been set aside by your board as part of last year's year-end close. We set aside $2 million for one-time costs associated with the new facility. At this time, we're recommending the use of $650,000 to fund those one-time purchases of supplies and equipment necessary to operate the facility. We are also looking for authority to enter negotiations with the California Forensic Medical Group, or CFMG, who currently provides the medical services at the Public Safety Center. We've made some educated guesses on what we think those cost increases might be, and you'll see those in just a moment, but we really need to go into negotiations with them to be sure we can continue to provide appropriate services to our inmates as they needed. Okay, here's the big slide. This is the budget for each of the years that Patty has described. 2016-2017, as indicated in the board report, the total cost is $5.2 million. The change to that is we would use 3-to-1, $3 of general fund, $1 CCP, and it would put CCP use at about $1.3 million, where your agenda item had it at $1.9 million. So that's the correction that we needed to make in the fiscal chart. In the second year, with the staffing as described, it would bring the total to $12.5 million, and at the point that your board decides to go to full occupancy and full staffing, we're looking at a cost of just over $18 million. And with that, we'll go to the recommendations. The first recommendation would be to approve the phased opening and staffing plan as described in this item. Amend the salary and position allocation resolution as reflected in the staffing impact to be effective on July 1st of 2016. Authorize the CEO and sheriff to implement the recruitment strategies necessary to meet those staffing requirements. Authorize the use of appropriations for contingencies by a 4/5 vote of your board for the $650,000 for the purchase of supplies and equipment funded from year-end savings previously set aside. Direct the auditor controller to transfer appropriations as reflected on the budget journal form for those one-time costs, and authorize the chief executive office to initiate negotiations with the California Forensic Medical Group for medical services upon opening of the new facility. And with that, our presentation is complete, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
At this time, anyone on the board have questions or concerns?
Just real quick, Patty or Cindy or Bill, whoever. So the first year staffing, how many beds in the first year staffing, how many beds in the second year staffing? Assuming that we filled it up, you know, the potential for
I believe it's 120 beds in the first phase.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Okay. And then I'm just looking at my chart here.
Another
120 additional maximum in the second phase.
So they were up to 240 at that
point. Right. And then we would have some of the booking all move over in that second phase. And then the final phases would have full opening of the medical facilities. And then finally, the remainder of all of the maximum security beds. We're really looking at phasing the medical. We're not convinced that that's doable completely, but the fact of the matter is that your county will have the first jail that has full and modern and totally licensable medical facilities. And that is such a benefit to others that find themselves in legal trouble or other challenges over medical facilities. But admittedly, those facilities and their final pieces would be in the final plan, both from an operational perspective and affordability. But I think it's really important for me to say, this is not just a money-based plan. This is a huge addition of public safety facilities that are different, very modern, new systems, and to hire that many people that are new and to train them and transition and to sort of shake out the bugs of the new facilities, I think this is a practical plan. We had literally tens and tens and tens and twenties of versions about phasing, looking at money, looking at a recruitment schedule, and looking at the practicality of the undertaking that our great Sheriff's Department will have just to get up to speed, staff to train and operate these facilities. So those were all the ingredients in this recipe of a more moderate phased plan. We could have probably really wanted to come in here and say, we need it all today. There's no doubt when you have modern facilities and you have old facilities, but you really can't afford it all today. And it really wasn't built all for today. It was really built for now and in the future, and to give your board and the sheriff and others the chance to make its opening and its phasing match our needs.
Okay, and so just one more. So the medical, just to make sure I understand, so the medical portion, that'll open in phases too. So in these 120 to 240, that's all going to include the medical, the 72 medical beds kind of phasing in too, is that right?
Right. The recruitment period that would end in October of 17 would bring in the first medical clinic services in 57 of those 72 medical beds. Those beds are unrated, so they're not counted in the total, and that would occur in that next phase.
Second phase of 57. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor O'Brien?
Yeah. Can you help me understand the 7.8 deputies on the transfer for the REACT Center?
I'm going to try because it's a little confusing.
Yeah, you
we
got
did the original staffing plan before we even imagined the REACT Center. And so, as you know, Captain Duncan, the whole team, they balance things every day in their jail system. They have medium security beds that are more modern, but they're not really appropriate classification-wise to house the type of offender here. So the original staffing plan imagined that when we opened the AB 900 phase 2 jail, a portion of the staffing from the downtown jail, I believe if I do this, Captain Duncan might smile, inmate worker quarters, IWQ or something like that. And so we imagined that in the plan, and that meant to us we would need fewer positions and we would close some of the beds in the downtown jail. But we needed to tell you that that's not going to happen now, because that same staff would be in our plan for REACT that came later that essentially closes the downtown jail except for court holding. Should I stop, Captain? Would you? Okay. Did that make sense to you, Supervisor?
No.
Okay. Then I'm going to ask Captain Duncan to come.
Because the REACT Center is further down the line past phase one.
Right.
And so why then do we need, if the REACT Center is not online yet, why do we need to replace the 7.8 deputies?
Well, it was really in our plan that we had already used that 7.8 positions, and now we need to essentially credit them. So, okay, I need Captain Duncan to come forward. Or Lieutenant Jacobs will save us again.
Minus the silver fox hair. So the 7.8, hi, good evening, board, CEO. Mr. Dorn, those folks were helping us meet the staffing needs in our 2013 plan. We were building to a budget, we were building to a number. So we moved those positions over to close IWQ and move it over. One of the difficulties with closing IWQ is the state expects us to be all new beds, things that we learn and figure out as we work through the staffing plan. So closing and moving from IWQ into the new facility is not new beds, it's closing beds. The REACT Center is our beds that are replacement beds of those that we would close at the jail. So we use those beds or those staff to fulfill what we needed in the 900 staffing plan we did it in 13. As we finish that and REACT comes about, it is replacement beds. We use those same staff. We dipped them twice for REACT and presented them to the board to say we can staff the REACT center with all of the staff that are required that are at the jail, except for we're trying to hold back a plan for court holding, so it won't create any additional staffing. So to do that, we needed all of the bodies at the jail. With the economy of the 12-hour shift, it allowed us to shift those bodies back to the jail for use when REACT opens. So they are, we could use them in advance, but they are not really designated, or that the 900 project is not really designated to close somewhere else and open part of the new beds.
So is the IWQ staying open then?
It will stay open.
So 7.8 need to stay. They're not closing the IWQ like they had originally planned.
We had essentially counted them twice. And because of the timing, that's our only excuse. We didn't imagine REACT when we thought we could begin a partial closure of the downtown jail. But our ultimate staffing plan does not count them twice.
Okay, next topic. With 32 new hires, our successful rate of hiring a new employee in the Sheriff's Department is 1%. So I math correct that we're gonna need about 3,200 applicants in order to find 32 custodial deputies?
Yeah, I think we're a little higher in our success rate.
Yeah, we've had a pretty enhanced recruitment effort by our new HR manager, and she actually has already some positions ready, some candidates ready. And so I think that percentage is actually much better than that. We've got a better candidate pool. We've done a little bit better with recruitment. And we think we're very confident we're going to be able to reach that goal without 3,200 candidates to have to compete.
If we fall short of the new hires, do we have a plan for that?
Yes.
Okay.
We have something we call the initial staffing plan, and I've shared it with the state to ensure that it would meet the county's contractual obligation to open the facility.
Okay. Lastly, one of the biggest concerns when we started down this road were transportation costs. So with phase one, are we going to see just sentenced inmates, or are we still going to see a mix of unsentenced and sentenced?
We will still have a mixture of sentenced and unsentenced inmates at all the facilities.
Okay.
That won't change.
So will there
and our classification staff will balance their needs based upon security level, security requirements, and then we'll schedule our transportation accordingly.
So will there be an increase in transportation costs, and we take that into consideration?
The
only increase would be additional inmates capacity, or the increased population. We have 552 new beds. If we add new beds and we need to take those to court, there may be some additional cost to take those inmates to court.
So that's just the whole picture that I'm trying to get in place.
Right. And I want to add to that, Supervisor O'Brien, we are updating the transportation plan as it relates to the REACT Center and other options the county may have to reduce transportation costs, and we'll pull that all back together. We really feel confident with the numbers for the first fiscal year, even though there'll only be 3 months of that. We've shown you the annual cost that we can cover it within the budget, and there's a contingency. But we see some opportunity to minimize transportation costs in the future, so we're going to be bringing that back to your committee and then back to the full board here shortly.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Chiesa.
You said something early on that this is the last leg, and it's also the most expensive leg, obviously. I remember back to 13 when we made this leap of faith, knowing the easy part was the 10% was there. That's all we were out on the construction. And this is what we've been concerned about the whole time. Been talking about soft openings, phased openings, and I'm glad to see that we're finally at that point. The beds are needed. There's no doubt that the beds are needed. But I like the slow and methodical way we've gone about this. Last week, I toured the downtown jail. I try and do that every year or so to remind myself of the safety and security of not only the inmates, but more of our staff. Is much more secure. It will be a much more secure environment, and I think that will be best for all. I'm again, at full build-out, I don't think that we need 480 beds. I don't think that anyone thinks we need 480 new beds right now today, but we will. And as we talk about jail modernization and phased openings, I think this works perfectly in our plan. So I appreciate what everyone's done. As always, great work by our staff, and it's full steam ahead. I will support this.
I just had one brief question. You said that the project was slightly ahead of schedule. When do you expect the completion date to be done now?
Well, our current completion date for the work here is October 28th. You may recall that the board has recently approved a scope of work that was required by the state fire marshal, and that was to boost the water system. The state is paying the 90%, actually 100% of that cost. So there's a slight extension of the current schedule just for that work. We still have the contractual obligation of March 31, 2017 to occupy. So final completion, substantial completion in the fall, final completion right after the new year.
All right, thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Well, at this time, I'll open up to the public if they have any concerns or questions. If not, I'll bring it back to the board and entertain a motion or comment.
I will go ahead and make a motion to approve all staff recommendations.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for all your work.
Thank you, guys.
At this time, we'll go into a correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the California Department of Transportation regarding the availability of the initial study proposed mitigated negative declaration for the State Route 99 Ripon Bridge project located at the San Joaquin and Stanislaus counties line.
Referred to the Department of Public Works.
This board has received a letter from the California Fish and Game Commission regarding proposed regulatory action relating to upland game bird hunting.
Referred to Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received a worker adjustment and retraining notification from CST California Stations, Inc. regarding permanently closing its California operations, including the location at 1590 East F Street in Oakdale by July 5th, 2016.
Referred to the Alliance Network and the Stanislaus Economic Development Workforce Alliance.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and referred to the Chief Executive Office. Risk Management Division. At this time, are there any reports or supervisors? None? We then will go to the Legislative Fiscal Management Report. Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Ryan.
Thank you. Last Friday, the governor released his May revised budget, and in doing so, he confirmed that state revenue is down now $1.2 billion. Less than they had originally projected in January due to a decline in personal income tax collections. And what that means for the upcoming budget is that they're revising downward their revenue projections by $2 billion for the 16-17 year. The governor continues to focus on preparing for the next recession and said the surging tide of revenue is beginning to turn. As would be expected, some members of the legislature are pressing for increases in benefits for child care, education, and monthly grant funding for families that have a child while on welfare. But the governor is proposing to hold the course. And so there's really not a lot of changes outside of the updated revenue and caseload from what he presented in January. We'll continue to monitor this, but at this point, it doesn't look like any significant impacts on county operations.
Thank you for all your services and meetings adjourned.